Technology should be marketed to everyone because everyone can benefit from having an assistive technology in one form or another. For a human to express oneself is one of the fundamental things that we do as a human.
At the core of it, independent living, I think, are those peer relationships. Those relationships that kind of validate who we are and our community's way of being in this society, which is not built for us, but is learning how to include us.
You just heard from Latif McLeod and Jesse Lorenz. Hey everyone, my name is Alice Wong, and I'm the host of the Disability Visibility Podcast. Conversations on disability politics, culture, and media. Today's episode is on assistive technology. All technology is assistive, and the range of products and services available now for disabled people is pretty amazing. I got a chance to talk with Latif and Jesse about the tech they use every day, how it impacts their lives, and the current barriers disabled people still face accessing assistive technology. When you heard Latif earlier, he was using a speech generating app on his iPad called Proloquo to Go. It voices what he types.
This is the Disability Visibility Podcast with your host, Alice Wong.
Are you ready? Away we go!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. My aim is Lady McLeod. My name is Latif McLeod. I am currently a doctoral student in the Anthropology and Social Change program at California Institute for Integral Studies. I plan to concentrate my studies on how people with significant disabilities can acquire more political and social power within the society. More media exposure is part of this acquiring of power. That is why your podcast is important along with my writing. I am in the process of writing another poetry book and a novel where I will be highlighting more disability issues. I am also busy doing advocacy work at my church, Allen Temple Baptist Church, in the Persons with Disabilities Ministry, and with the International Society for Augmentative and Alternative Communication, where I am lead chair.
So, Latif, tell me a little bit about the types of assistive technology that you use. But you can't live without.
The assistive technologies that I cannot live without are my power wheelchair, because that is how I get around, and the Proloquo to Go and Proloquo to text apps on my iPad and my iPhone, because that is how I communicate.
Yep, I'm in a power chair too. Without my computer, without my wheelchair, I will be stuck at home. It's pretty much essential to my life.
Yes. Yes, and of course, I cannot live without my laptop.
So, we're talking about assistive technology, and especially ones that assist with communication. What is augmentative and alternative communication for people who've never heard of that term? It's also known as AAC.
Augmentative and alternative communication is nonverbal communication for people with speech disabilities using symbols, letters, and words on low-tech and high-tech devices.
And how have you used AAC throughout your life? Was it all throughout your life or only later as you got a little older?
I started using AAC when I was 6 and obtained my first touch talker.
Obviously, you've seen a lot of changes throughout the years with AAC and other forms of assistive technology. As you grew up, what was it like using all the different kinds of devices as time's gone on? What have you observed and experienced?
The main difference between my iPad and my other AAC devices is the iPad is mass-produced and as a result is much more inexpensive than the AAC. Devices that I had before that was produced specifically for people with complex communication needs. As a result, my other devices were thousands of dollars compared to my iPad, which was hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, definitely. I think the lead towards universal design has really put the AAC and other forms of assistive technology really in the hands of disabled people. You know, many of whom do not have money, or maybe they might not have insurance to cover these devices and technology like this. What do you think can be done to get more iPads and other forms of assistive technology to non-speaking disabled people who really need it?
I think devices need to be more integrated with other devices people normally buy, like phones, tablets, and computers, so that the overhead cost will come down.
I totally agree with you. You know, there's this rehabilitation industrial complex where, you know, some of these devices you used in the past were designed and created for people with complex disabilities, and that's medicalized, and technology is so much more than that. And for me, the stuff that I used in the past was not designed for us. It is usually not only, like you said, very expensive, but it's often very ugly and not the easiest to use. And very rarely are these kinds of technology and devices created by disabled people, but that's slowly changing. Can you tell me about an example of, let's say, before iPads, before iPhones, before Wi-Fi and laptops, a device that you used for AAC that did what you needed to do, but you really kind of didn't like it, or that it was really difficult to use?
One of my first devices was called a touch talker, and it was a bulky thing with picture icons on it, and I had to remember picture sequences to access instant phrases, but I always would forget the phrases and would just spell everything out.
Yeah, I imagine that you had to remember a lot of things depending on the device, because they're so limited and you have limited choices. So you mentioned you were 6 when you first started using AAC. Do you remember what life was like before you started using AAC and other forms of technology like this?
Before I acquired my first AAC device, which was a touch talker, my mom made picture boards where I could point to different words. I also could verbalize simple words and could perform rudimentary sign language.
What do you think is the importance of AAC and other forms of assistive technology for people with disabilities, as you've seen in your own life and with people of the disability community?
The importance of AAC should be obvious because it allows people who have complex communication needs to express themselves and interact with people in their community.
Absolutely. If you had a wish list, or if you had a room with designers and engineers and creators, what improvements would you like with the tech that you're using right now? What would you like to see in the future in terms of new forms of AAC or assistive technology?
On the issue of improving the design of AAC is definitely an ongoing thing. My first and the most important issue that I think needs to be addressed is more availability of AAC devices to those who need them at a more affordable price. I would like to make sure that everyone who needs a device has one.
Yeah. I think the lines between technology and assistive technology is really blurry, right? Everyone who has an iPhone to use Siri, and Siri is a form of assistive technology for a lot of people with disabilities. So I think that the lines are blurry, and when more people think of it as a standard feature, it can only help everyone. Is there anything you would like to see in the future that you would really benefit from, but that you haven't seen yet?
I would like to have a vocal ID for my OC devices, because they are advertised to produce a more personalized digital voice that will sound like the particular user.
Yeah, that would be nice. It would be really nice to have a customized voice to really reflect your personality, because that must be pretty challenging to get the full expression of your emotion and personality from a device that sounds somewhat standardized.
People who have AAC definitely have a lot of issues beyond acquiring the right AAC so that we can communicate. Some of us have severe mobility disabilities as well, so that further marginalizes us in our community. Because of our challenges with communication, we face more seclusion and isolation than other members of the population. So what I am studying now in my graduate program is how people who use AAC can gain the social and political power to be more included and engaged in society. We need more than technology to fix this problem. We need to change the consciousness of society to be more accepting to people who use AAC.
I totally agree with you. So Latif, if listeners want to reach you or talk to you, how can they get in touch?
Okay, people can reach me at Cut2Smooth. That's Twitter, that is the letter K and the number 2. And also my website is LatifHMcLeod.com.
Great. Thank you, Latif. Now, let's hear my conversation with Jesse Lorenz about the tech she uses every day and the assistive technology services provided by the Independent Living Resource Center of San Francisco.
I am the executive director of the Independent Living Resource Center San Francisco. We are the independent living center that serves San Francisco County. We've been around for 40 years now.
So, tell me a little bit about the services that the ILRCSF provides regarding assistive technology.
We have a wonderful service called our Nick Feldman Device Lending Library. We can provide information and referral for assistive technology products, devices, and services. We are part of a network of device lending libraries around the state of California, where people can test out technology before they buy it. Or sometimes they just need it for a temporary reason. So we have wheelchair ramps, tablets, computers, support canes, and people can borrow them from us or any of the other libraries throughout California. We also, as part of that library, are beginning a new program with Senior and Disability Action, where we will be offering more classes to people in San Francisco. Classes about what tablet should I buy, you know, my vision is going and I want to be able to read things, you know, what options are out there.
How do you decide what products are available at your library?
Well, in large part, our choices about the technology that we buy within any given year are based on the needs or the requests that we get from our local San Francisco community. So, for example, small portable handheld magnifying devices, people like to try those out before they go and buy. And some of those can be really expensive, especially if you're getting ones that like take pictures of things that are far away from you. Wheelchair ramps are another one where people want it because they're coming into town for a short amount of time, but they don't actually want to buy it. I like to take a look at what the other libraries are carrying and what are some of the hot items. You can't get enough tablets. There's always new things to try with the tablets. We happen to have a lot of augmentative communication devices. because we had somebody who was on our staff who was really into like mounting tablets and GoPros on people's wheelchairs. And so we happen to have a lot of choices for things that can be hooked to wheelchairs. We actually had some money for the Christopher Reeve Foundation where people, if they participated in a short-term group, they were able to keep that technology.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so, I mean, and we learned a lot. We learned a lot about, like, the right way to mount things. We did a little, like, how to record your accessibility challenges. A lot of the people in that short-term group were coming out of Laguna Honda Hospital. It all just happened to be men who were, like, folks who had lived in the community for long-term. And we turned them all into, like, photograph taking, GoPro using, wheelchair accessibility problem videoing people. It was totally fun.
You know, this library, it's so needed. So many books are out there that are fantastic and that can make a really huge difference to the lives of people with disabilities. And yeah, for financial reasons and other reasons, it's out of reach. Can you speak to a little bit about, I guess, the importance of assistive technology and also the financial aspect and other aspects that are barriers to getting the right technology to the hands of disabled people?
It's like the best of times and it's the worst of times. It's the best of times because there are so many technological options out there for people. And sometimes with some disabilities, those options are really expensive. Sometimes you have to be dependent on like agency funding, you know, like Department of Rehab. That's really the one that we work with the most to fund assistive technology. But then at the same time, you know, there's a lot of freeware and shareware assistive technologies, like non-visual desktop access, for example, is a screen reader. Anyone can download it from anywhere around the world. You know, accessibility being built into products, I think, is not so much of an anomaly. It's more of a given with products from both Google and Apple. It is also very true that people who often need technology in their daily lives, you know, that we encounter, can't afford the technologies that they need. So, I mean, I think that the project that we did with the Christopher Reeve Foundation, I'd like to do more programs like that.
There's a financial divide, and then there's also the digital divide.
I think the biggest digital divide has to do with broadband or internet access at home. You know, whether or not people have it or don't have it is a big deal. And in San Francisco, they talk about, oh, there's free Wi-Fi all over the city. You know, sometimes that Wi-Fi doesn't work in some of the more hilly parts of the city. And if you don't have the appropriate equipment to connect in the first place, you know, it doesn't really do a whole lot of good. So I think there are some really good conversations going on about how to make sure that seniors and people with disabilities in San Francisco can access Wi-Fi and can access public computer labs. That's part of what we're trying to do with our new project with Senior and Disability Action is create a space for folks with even the most functional limitations to come in and like learn how to use a Mac and do iMovie or like learn how to use a spreadsheet on a computer. There are barriers to access. And I think one of the things that is really unique about what we're trying to do as well is really create a community approach to accessing technology.
Right. Especially what is run by people with disabilities, for people with disabilities, which is really kind of a different approach than most nonprofits. And why do you think that's important from the community, by the community?
I'm a person who was born blind. Blind, very blind. Like, I have two fake eyes. And Walter, who runs our Nick Feldman Device Lending Library, is a person who's quadriplegic. Walter and I run our lives using technology. Not because we're geeks, but we are geeks, for sure. But because, like, technology allows us, I think, to hack our disabilities in really new and meaningful ways. there really is something to be said for you don't know someone until you've walked in their shoes, or you don't understand someone until you've walked in their shoes.
For so many of us, there's such isolation and fear that it's incredibly powerful to see other people using technology or just being really creative with their adaptations. And that gives a huge amount of validation and affirmation. I think seeing other peers live their lives the way they want, it's empowering, for lack of a better word. People are hungry for that. Can you tell me a little bit about these eyewear glasses you've been using?
I got these amazing new sunglasses with a small Google camera mounted on the right-hand side. I connect to the Iris service on an app with my phone. Also, the glasses are connected to a portable MiFi that I carry around in addition to carrying my phone. Like, I often wear a little tiny earpiece and have this person that I contact giving me information about what's going on around me. Within 10 seconds of pushing a button, I can have a sighted person giving me visual interpretation of my environment. This has proved really amazingly helpful in situations like when I go to the airport. I just turn on my glasses, sort of scan my head back and forth, and the lady's like, you know, turn to your right. Okay, walk about 15 feet. Okay, it's to your left. Make a left turn. I turn left. I'm having one of my senses augmented. You pay for the service, and so it's like $89 for 100 minutes. I'll just say that you can go through minutes really fast. And it's sort of an interesting conversation about, like, should one have a right to visual information, and who should pay for that? It has changed my life. I used to run before my daughter was born, and then my life got hectic. But now I've gotten back into running with the glasses. They help me find the trail that I really like. I love to just, like, turn them on and say, tell me what's going on around me in new places or loud places.
And is there a lot of interaction between you and the visual interpreter?
They're really helpful for getting Uber, because I can just have them call on my account and say, like, hail me an Uber. And they will stay with me looking at the glasses feed and looking at the Uber feed and be like, okay, the car just crossed this street. Oh, I see him right there. Okay, wave to him, step in the street. So there's interaction that way, but somebody should write a story about this weird relationship that I think does kind of develop. I went to the National Archives with the glasses, and I walked around all by myself. I intentionally separated from my group, and I just used the glasses, and it was amazing. The guy's name was Drew, who was on the other end of the Aerophone. When I talk about my experience going through the museum, I can't talk about it without talking about Drew, because Drew read me all the documents, and I don't know anything about Drew, even Drew's last name, but, like, Drew made my experience of the National Archives absolutely awesome and wonderful.
I think a lot about cyborgs, because I do think about disabled people who are early adopters of technology, constantly innovating and adapting tech to their bodies and needs. And we are all cyborgs to some extent. Do you imagine tech like Ira becoming a permanent part of your body, or another stream of sensory inputs that might be an option to people one day?
First of all, sign me up to be a cyborg.
Cyborg!
I think it's going to take a long time before people adopt this kind of technology. People get upset, like, oh, is this going to replace cane skills or guide dog skills? No way does it replace it. But I will say, for myself, I love having it on. Like, when I walk around with just my cane in my neighborhood, I feel my body is more relaxed. I'm physically able to be in space in a different way. And it's not because I'm not a good traveler. I'm a great traveler. I've been doing this all my life. It's not because I don't know how, you know, or any of that. It's just, like, it is actually helpful to have some more information about, like, oh yeah, your neighbors left their trash like 10 feet in front of you on the sidewalk. Stay to your left.
Or watch out, a piece of turd.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or like, here's an example, like for parenting, it was really helpful. When I left Denver Airport, I took my daughter to see family. I used the glasses to get us out. We had to take the train. And usually I would need to either like reach over and make physical contact to make sure she stayed on the train, or I'd make verbal contact, you know, just to make sure that she stayed where she needed to be. And the glasses allowed me to confirm in a non-conspicuous way what she was doing and that she was doing the right thing.
Wow. It really makes such a difference in the lives of people. How do we get it in the hands of more people? We should make it more available, but oh yeah, that's capitalism. Are there other types of assistive technology that you use that you can't live without? What are your two favorite things aside from the Ira?
Oh, my life is in the Apple ecosystem. I use my iPhone, you know, to manage everything. My life and the lives of others. My iPad is an extension of that. And I love my Mac computer.
I like the voice memo on iPhone. I use it a lot. I didn't even realize this feature until a little bit later. Do you think the term assistive technology is ever going to be outmoded one day as things become more integrated and mainstream?
I think that that term comes out of the Rehab Act, and that programs like this one come from Rehab Act funding. So I think that that term is outdated, and you know, universal design is definitely the way the world is going, and not to be nerdy.
Hey, I love nerdy outs. I love how you think it's outvoted, because I do think, in a way, it's another silo. It really creates this idea that there's technology for this group of people that's somewhat separate and special, and not disabled people have products just for them, which is not true to life.
Right, I agree. I just want to thank you for all the work that you've done teaching us about ourselves and our collective history, and keeping that conversation going in a way that can be archived forever. It's a really, really valuable, and some of the things that we were talking about, you know, affirming one another. Your Disability Visibility Project is doing that for our people, and I want to commend you and thank you.
That's really kind of you, Jesse. I do feel like these conversations that we have every day, it's like we're creating history and culture together. And this keeps me going. It's a delight to do this, and it's a real privilege. So Jesse, if people want to follow you or find you, how can people do that?
My organization website is ilrcsf.org, Independent Living Resource Center, San Francisco. I'm on Twitter as Uppity Blind Mom, or you can just search for Jesse Lorenz. Well, thank you, Alice.
Thank you, Jesse. This podcast is a production of the Disability Visibility Project, and all of our community dedicated to creating, sharing, and amplifying disability media and culture. All episodes, including text transcripts, are available at disabilityvisibilityproject.com/podcast. The audio producer for this episode is Cheryl Green. Introduction by Latif McLeod. Theme music by Realtor Sports Camp. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word about it and subscribe to the Disability Visibility Podcast on iTunes. You can also support the work of creating disabled media by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/DVP. That's patreon.com/DVP. Thanks for listening. Dear CG of internets.